Good evening. This is Brian Holland, and before this week's episode, we really wanted to echo the sentiment of the crew over at the Android Netrunner Pro Circuit. By now, I'm sure most of you would have heard that the ANRPC was a community-run circuit of tournaments aimed at creating more competitive events, with the end result of giving more people the opportunity to attend Worlds. Coupled with the Bring Another Brit to Worlds tournament over in England, this project had been masterfully developed and is still a very strong sign that the Netrunner community across the world is determined to stimulate the player base and create new content. We here at TWA are fully behind everyone who has put time and effort into the ANRPC and fully support them in their endeavours, including the issues which have recently arisen for them regarding Fantasy Flight Games not allowing them to offer the prize support that the ANRPC really wanted. We hope that in the coming months and the coming seasons of competitive play that these issues can be rectified and that come 2016, the ANRPC will be able to function as its creators intended. With some luck and a little effort, we might even see a branch down here in the Asia-Pacific region. Please enjoy this week's episode of The Winning Agenda. Hello, and welcome to episode 35 of The Winning Agenda. Tonight, our panellists include runner-up for both the 2014 Melbourne Regionals and the 2014 Australian Nationals, Liam Prasad.
Hey there, Brian. How are we doing, everyone?
Runner-up for the 2015 Melbourne Regionals and three-time Magic the Gathering Pro Tour competitor, Wilfie Horrig.
Hi, how's it going?
2014 Australian National Champion and 2014 World's Top 16 competitor, Jesse Marshall.
It's good to be here.
And I'm your host, Brian Holland, 2014 Australian Nationals Top 8 competitor. Okay, guys, we're going to be talking about Chrome City this episode. So the first card we'll be speaking about is Immolation Script. It's an Anarch event, run, sabotage, cost 0, 3 influence. It reads, make a run on Archives. If successful, instead of accessing a piece of ice in Archives, trash a rezzed copy of that ice. Jesse, what do you think?
I really, really like this card. I think it's a massive boost to Noise in particular. Noise already gives you a reward for running Archives in sort of consistently throughout the game. When I play Noise, I like to play heavy-ish on the mill and try and get into Archives as frequently as possible rather than relying on one big run late in the game. And what this allows you to do is still access all the other cards except pieces of ice, except whatever one piece of ice you want to trash, which means you can steal agendas and you're still getting the value from that run, and you get to trash another piece of ice on another central server potentially and attack in there as well. So I think this allows you to execute your game plan in terms of stealing cards from Archives as well as strengthening your backup game plans of attacking R&D with a medium or attacking HQ with a potentially a vamp, wanton destruction, or nerve agent. So I really like this card. I think in Noise in particular, you'll be getting more ice into Archives that the corp can't control, which is going to weaken their ice suite and it's going to make them think twice about every piece of ice they res.
Yeah, I just want to chime in and echo that. That's a really good way to play this card, I think, to just try and get into use it as a point of use it as a way to get into Archives without just spending it trying to gain an access on points, because that's something that Noise can do quite well. And while he is competing with Jackson Howard over the mid game, it's normally just something you want to do now and then. But in particular, I really like the way this card's just scales out the cost on Archives. Every time you get in there, you can trash it down and just force them to continue icing it up. In combination with your Parasites, your Deja Vus, and your Data Suckers, you can keep all the servers down low, pressure them to put more ice on Archives as you trash it down, and then just kill them with a medium or a nerve agent. It's fantastic.
The next card we're speaking about is the first of the Cybernetics. It's called Skulljack. It's a unique Anarch Hardware, Cybernetic, install cost 2, influence cost 2. When you install Skulljack, suffer 1 brain damage. The trash cost of all cards is lowered by 1.
I don't think this is the most powerful of the Cybernetics. Suffering a brain damage is a much bigger drawback than meat or net damage. I think the meat damage is what the other Cybernetics do the same at the moment. But it's certainly more of a drawback because it gives you that permanent hand size reduction, unless you've got a way to avoid it, obviously. And lowering the cost of all trash cards whilst being relevant sometimes is not always relevant in all matchups. So you're going to have to slot this card into your deck. It's not a virus. It doesn't do anything with any of your other IDs. It's got a drawback on it. And if it's not relevant in the particular matchup you're playing, it's dead deck space.
Yeah, just with respect to trashing cards, I often feel like it's one of those critical mass things. Because so many of the assets have comparable power levels once they make their way into a deck, you really only want to play assets that are very good, so any assets that are below that power level tend to be not played very much. So the assets that do see play tend to be of a very high power level, but tend to be rather consistent across that across that power level. So I feel like trashing assets is kind of one of those critical mass things where you either do it very little or you either do it a lot. And so this card could see some play in decks that want to see that may want to consider trashing assets quite a lot. And again, because it's a critical mass thing, those are decks where you are going to see a bad pub, or where you are going to see maybe a card like Scrubber or maybe a card like Wizard. And so stacking on these effects a little bit stronger, but it makes Skullclamp a little bit easier to work with. And so I could see it in maybe some Valencia decks or some Wizard decks. I don't really see it outside of that, just because reducing the cost by one is a very small thing.
The next card we're speaking about is Turntable. It's a unique Anarch console. Install 2, influence 2, plus 1 memory. When you steal an agenda, you may swap that agenda with an agenda in the Corpse score area. Wilfie, you a fan?
In terms of Anarch consoles, they all have their niches and they're not all good in lots of situations. We don't have an Anarch console like Astrolabe or Desperado, which just slots in basically to all of those in faction decks. And so we have Grimoire, which you need critical mass of viruses to be good. Spinal Modem, you want to be using the recurring credits as often as possible. With Vigil, Vigil just isn't really good because it doesn't really give you a benefit if the corp just goes down to one less card in hand. And so this, I think, slots into the generic Anarch console slot where you just mostly need the memory but want an effect which can be useful throughout the game. And so if you look at what this card does, first it punishes very uneven point splits, like for example the Glacier decks that play threes and ones, or you know, combinations of threes, twos and ones can easily lose multiple points to this. Even though I think those decks are not as common nowadays as they used to be, I think there still are a lot of agenda spreads on common corp decks where Turntable is good. Like, even against the most common MBN agenda split, which only has twos and ones, where Turntable is at its weakest, it can still score you an extra point if you can cycle breaking users or steal Astroship counters. And while the window to do that is not like that large, it's still, I think, this card can easily decide a game, and that's, I think, a reasonable ability for a card to have that you're going to put in your deck, you know, if you want the memory and have an effect which can be really good, even if most of the time it's only going to be mediocre.
A lot of people have been saying about this card that you won't be able to steal the sort of Nisei Mark II before they spend the counter, or you won't be able to steal the Astro Scripts before they spend the counter because they'll just use it once you have your turntable out. And it's really worth pointing out that if you have a card that's forcing your opponent to use really precious resources in a suboptimal way, that's actually a massive benefit as well, because Nisei Mark II counters are at their most powerful when the Replicating Perfection player waits until the final turn when they're trying to score out their second to last or their last agenda and they've got everything set up. And if you force them to use it earlier just so you don't get to nab it with your turntable, then that's a really big benefit. And similarly with Astro Scripts counters, if you force them to use it on a breaking news or on a project build rather than the next Astro, that can be something that will decide the game in itself.
Yeah, I feel like it's such a good card if you're in a race, which isn't to be underestimated, because that's somewhere that Anarchs, I feel, have been weakest for a while, because of the lack of consistent access as they fail in the races. And this is a big card in that kind of situation.
The last Anarch card we're talking about is Chrome Parlor. It's a resource, location, install 1, influence 1. Prevent all meat damage and brain damage from installing cybernetics. Jesse, is there a competitive all-cybernetic tribal deck that wants this card?
I mean, these sorts of cards like Starlight Crusade funding and this that encourage you to go all in on a subtype of cards generally aren't particularly powerful. You need to draw your cards in the right order. You need to be focusing on cards that don't necessarily have synergy with each other in terms of your strategy, but have synergy with each other purely because they're of the same card type. I mean, if you look at the cybernetics in this pack, they don't all necessarily do anything that's particularly interrelated to a particular strategy. So I don't think Chrome Parlor is very powerful at the moment, just like Starlight Crusade funding before it. But if there are lots of cybernetics and they do come together into some sort of consistent strategy, then it could be a part of it because it's low influence, low install cost.
The first criminal card we're going to talk about is Titanium Ribs. It's unique, hardware cybernetic, install 1, influence 2. When you install Titanium Ribs, suffer 2 meat damage. You choose the cards from your group to trash whenever you take damage, including the damage taken by installing Titanium Ribs. Liam.
I actually have these. I have a bunch of titanium in my chest. And let me tell you, it sucks about as much as I think this card sucks. I think it's fucking awful. 2 influence for a card that's really only going to see play in Anarch decks with, like, Stimhack. When your influence is already so pressured, it just makes it impossible to make work. I just don't think this card's going to see any play whatsoever unless your deck is already quite bad. Sorry, everyone.
I was just going to say briefly, I think the best use for this card would be to support the powerful cybernetics like Net Ready Eyes, but you can install 1 Net Ready Eyes for the same downside as installing your Titanium Ribs. So Titanium Ribs is actually saving you nothing at that point. It seems pretty bad.
The next card is Crowbar. Program, Icebreaker, Decoder, Cloud, Install 1, Memory 1, Strength 0, Influence 2. If you have at least 2 Link, the memory cost of Crowbar is 0, even if it is not installed. Crowbar has +1 strength for each installed Icebreaker. Trash, break up to 3 code gate subroutines. Wilfie, do you love this card?
I don't really see where it fits in. Like, just with this whole, like, the... what are people calling it? You know,
they're called Cloud Breakers. Yeah.
No, not Cloud Breakers, but the Crowbar. Yeah, Crowbar and the other 2 Crowbars. I just don't see the point because there aren't any, like, really... You can't mass icebreakers like you can with the other types. It's not like, you know, you're going to have all these icebreakers for a benefit, and then you can leverage those icebreakers to give you a crowbar strength. Like, those icebreakers are ready. All they do is break ice, so I don't really get it.
The first Shaper card is Net Ready Eyes. We spoke about this fairly extensively in our last episode, and world champion Dan D'Argenio went quite deep on it. So please check out episode 34 if you want to hear our thoughts on Net Ready Eyes. The following Shaper card is Analog Dreamers. It's a program, install 2, memory 1, influence 3. It has ability click, make a run on R&D. If successful, instead of accessing cards, you may choose an unresed non-ice card with no advancement tokens on it in a server and shuffle it into R&D. Jesse, is this too narrow to see play?
Sorry, I need to read this card again. What the fuck?
It's a bit of a mouthful, hey? So you pick a face-down card that they don't res in response and you get rid of it.
I don't think that this card is very good at all. Shapers are generally going to find that their opponent is icing up R&D more than any other server, and requiring you to specifically make a run on R&D, be successful at the time when the corp has an important unres non-ice card in a remote server with no advancement tokens on it is very narrow. And Shapers are already so squeezed for deck space. The Shaper faction has an incredible amount of powerful cards that you just can't fit into decks because you're trying to keep it down to minimum deck size. And having an effect like this that requires a successful run on R&D doesn't let you access and gives you very minimal narrow benefit, I don't think is really going to see much serious play at all.
Yeah, I've been playing a kit deck with Lady in the Red Dress that doesn't play R&D interface. And that could actually maybe use this card quite well. But those kind of decks tend to be quite aggressive. So just like Jesse was saying, this I don't feel like it's going to find a home even in decks that do want to use it just because they're tailored differently.
The last runner card is neutral hardware called Brain Cage. It is unique. It's hardware cybernetic. Install cost 1, influence 0. When you install Brain Cage, suffer 1 brain damage. Your maximum hand size is increased by 3. Wilfie, do you like it?
Not really. It seems like, one, increasing your maximum hand size doesn't really help you. As we've gone over many times before, it only barely gives you a benefit. And having to reduce your maximum hand size or play something else to stop you from reducing your maximum hand size means that I don't really see the advantage of this over something like Public Sympathy, which basically does the same thing, but more efficiently.
The first set of corp cards we're talking about, we're going to talk about as a group. So this group includes the Identity Cybernetics Division, Humanity Upgraded. It's a deck 40, influence 15. Each player's maximum hand size is reduced by 1. This package includes an agenda. It's called Self-Destruct Chips. It's an agenda security. Advance cost 3, score points 1. The runner's maximum hand size is reduced by 1. And the upgrade, Ryan Knight. It's a unique SysOp. Res 2, Trash 3, Influence 2. It has the ability Trash, do 1 brain damage, use this ability only during a run on this server, and only if the runner has no unspent clicks. I do like that they now seem to have 3 dedicated damage decks for each faction, using each type of different damage. Liam, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it comes together quite nicely. We'll have to see how the rest of the decks look, but as an aggressive HP deck that's orientated around damage, we could see Scorch have this. We could see Neural EMPs with maybe something like a accelerated diagnostics if you're the kind of person that has no fear. I'm actually just really interested to see where this goes. I don't particularly think it's very powerful. Brain damage, I tend not to believe, is very good, or just much better than net damage, unless you get 2 or 3, maybe. But brain damage by itself isn't very good. I could see the identity being seen played very aggressively, just because the one less card means one less click to draw the card. One less card means the lower chance of them having the breaker immediately. And, you know, where my mind goes to, like, Mushin, Paper Wall. And if they have one less card, that's, you know, effectively a 22 or 23% chance lower that they'll have the breaker. So that's pretty cool. But aside from that, yeah, we'll just have to see where this goes.
Jesse, are you going to want to be playing this like a shell game style?
Yeah, it works well with... These cards work well with Cerebral Overrider. It just gives you more options in terms of the Overrider. It works well against Andromeda on turn one. I mean, it forces them to be at least discarding one card, which is nice. But yeah, I quite like Rion Knight. The ability to for an upgrade to be used mid-run, I think, is very powerful. Doing a brain damage is... The value of that is going to be dependent on how consistently you can get Cerebral Overriders happening, which is going to depend on how consistently you can put pressure on the runner, and also what other ways you have to punish the runner for having brain damage, which means playing cards like Scorched Earth. So, unfortunately, I think at the moment, this sort of package is going to rely on something like Scorched Earth to really push home the kill. Potentially punitive Counter-Strike also, which has worked its way into HB decks in the past. So there's some space there. Rion Knight has the power level to be played competitively. Self-Destruct Chips is also a good support card in that regard. And I'm pretty excited to see some brews with this and see where it turns out.
Yeah, I think I would happily play Self-Destruct Chip as the one pointer in like a 3-point shell behind punitive in this ID. That would probably come together quite nicely.
The next HB card is Lapdog. It's an ice trap, res 2, strength 0, influence 2. Its one subroutine reads, the runner trashes an installed piece of hardware, trash Lapdog. Wilfie, do you like it?
Well, cards which the runner chooses, of course, have the drawback that if they have multiple things, if you're playing this to kill something in particular, for example, Plascoid Carapace is the hardware which most hardware destroyers are played to destroy. This has the problem that if they have Desperado or or R&D interface or anything like that, then you don't get to choose what they take out. And of course, it only gets to be used once. And the fact that, combined with the fact that some decks even inadvertently have ways to break traps, meaning that you can't always be sure of hitting this, like if they have any AI breaker or self-modifying code to get Atman or anything like that, then they can break this. Yeah, or Clone Trip with Parasite. It just seems like this card is far too situational to be good, to be worth putting in your deck, even if you do really want to kill hardware.
Or just Clone Chip in general. So that's pretty dumb. They could just trash the Clone Chip.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, they don't spend two.
Yeah. Yeah, Clone Chip's a hardware, right? Like, there are just too many ways that they could break this or get around it. Like, what it should really read is the runner trashes their weakest piece of hardware. The fact is, that could be an Ekamatsu Mem chip. Hell, that could be, like, it could just be awful. This card could just do nothing. Yeah, yeah. The point I'm trying to make is that this card has very high variance, which is just not something you want in something that should be shoring up your position in some other game, like a Scorch game, or like a remote game if you're like a Gagarin deck.
Yeah, like Desperado. This card's, it's so much less precise than the other two traps, like Kitsune and Universal Connectivity Fee, both of which I think have more raw power, in that Kitsune can make them hit a snare, which is pretty good. Universal Connectivity Fee can drain all of their credits, but this is requires just as much, it has just as much variance, but the variance is less in your control. Like, you can't design your deck to make more use of Labdog. You have to rely on their deck making their one piece of hardware and play the one you want to hit, which is really bad.
The next card is Oaktown Grid. It's an HP upgrade, region, res 1, trash 1, influence 2. The trash cost of cards installed in the server is increased by 3, limit 1 region per server.
Yeah, I think the problem with this card is that the rules kind of get in the way of it, in that if you res this before anything else in the server, then they can just access this first, trash it, then access the other cards. So I don't know, like, if they thought about that or anything when designing this card, because it seems like it kind of ruins the whole point.
So depending on the ruling on this, it could go from anywhere from, I guess, maybe subpar to quite good.
No, but I'm sure that Wilfie's right. I think I can't see another way they could rule, right?
Because because Red Herring even says on the turn where Red Herring's is trash.
Yeah, I think previously they've announced in, like, parentheses and things like that how it's meant to work. So look, like, it's probably not that good. You're pretty pressed for upgrades as well. I think I tend to agree with Tom's call on this, which is that you generally want to play about 4 upgrades, be 3 Ashes and an aggressive Secretary, or 3 Ashes and, like, a corporate troubleshooter. Yeah, that guy. But, like... Oh yeah, you're like 3 Niseis and an Ash or something like that. So Oaktown's probably not going to make its way into very much, but if you're like being aggressive with a dedicated Sansan server, it could be quite good.
I think it's probably just worse than Encryption Protocol most of the time.
It can't go in the same server as Sansan.
I think it's probably just worse than Encryption Protocol most of the time, because it only applies to the one server. As Wolfie said, you can trash it first, whereas Encryption Protocol at least forces more runs.
Or Ash, which is like... Because it goes like Ash and then Encryption Protocol, right? Because Encryption Protocol offers you compression as well as extra credit cost, whereas Ash just offers you extra credit cost unless you have a Domineering credit advantage.
The first Jinteki card is Clairvoyant Monitor. It's an Ice, Code Gate, Psy, Res 4, Strength 3, Influence 2. Its one subroutine is a Psy game, and if the runner loses, you place one advancement token on an installed card and end the run.
I think this is the worst piece of ice that's come out in the last year.
Yeah, the stats on it, like, it doesn't even seem like the Psy game is costed as a drawback in terms of how they cost cards. Like, if you look at, like, this card, then compared to a 4 cost, like, a Data Pike or something, it just, even if it just had the ability on its own, I'm not even sure it would be better. Maybe it would be a little better, but the fact that you have to spend credits basically to get it to fire, because they can always just spend 0 if they want to, and of course most runners will spend 0 every time on the Psy game, means that you have to res it and then spend more credits to have it do something, and it only does something if you can, like, it's only worthwhile the first time they hit it if you win the Psy game and you can place a counter on something. And especially now that Yogg is making a big resurgence, I can't see this card being playable.
Yeah, if you told me the stats from this card, I would say, well, Yogg exists, so maybe I would price this card at 1 to 1.5. Like, 2 if you want to play conservatively, 1 if you want to just be aggressive with it. So this card costing 4, I don't know why I'm just throwing a beanstalk away.
The next piece of ice is Lockdown. It's Jinteki, Ice, Code Gate, Res 0, Strength 5, Influence 1. The one subroutine is the runner cannot draw cards for the remainder of this turn. Is this any better than the previous card?
Oh, yeah. This card's really good.
I think somebody got confused in the testing room, or after the testing, and just gave the wrong notes to the developers or whatever.
Yeah, maybe it's actually just a misprint, and they intended the stats on Lockdown to be on the other one, and the stats on the other one to be on this one.
As it is, the runner not being able to draw cards for the remainder of this turn is useful if you can get the runner's hand size down on their turn and then punish them for it in your turn, which means having either Scorched Earth, Neural EMPs, or Ronin. This plays very well into those strategies.
Or the tank. Or is that what it's called? The flip.
Jinteki Biotech.
It's not the tank, but yeah. The brewery.
I think it's the brewery.
So any of those things where you're proactively trying to damage the runner on your turn as the Jinteki player, this will be good. It could even potentially be good at one influence splashing into Wayland in Scorch decks, but... given that Wayland does have fewer code gates than other factions, but again, influence is very tight, so that might be tight.
The thing is as well, this is effectively a hard end to run a lot of the time. Because if they do run into a snare or if they run into a psychic field, they're guaranteed dead to a neural EMP. So they just can't afford to make that access until they can break a 5-strength code gate. And it costs you zero. So, I don't know, you need a runner with a lot of gojones to make this kind of deal without just jacking out. So, to me, it's an end the run.
It's a really sweet way to get the shell game onto a piece of ice, I think.
The first NBN card is Little Engine. It's a code gate, res 5, strength 7, influence 2. Its subroutines read, end the run, and the runner gains 5 credits. Interesting card.
Yeah, I think it's worth explaining about this one. For the first time I read it, I was really confused. But yes, so with ice, you fire subroutines in order. So the end the run subroutine would fire first. And then only if the runner breaks the two end the run subroutines do they get to gain 5. So effectively, it's a strength 7 code gate that they have to pay to pump their icebreaker to strength 7, then break 2 subroutines. And then if they do break 2 subroutines, the third one will fire and they'll gain 5.
So if you got a Corona, you just get through this for 2 credits, essentially.
It's a code gate. But yeah.
Gordian Blade. Okay, fuck. Yeah.
Gordian Blade, sorry.
Yeah. Which is the code gate Corona. Yeah. It's a little bit better than the code gate Corona, yeah.
You get through it for 2. If you've got a Gordian Blade.
I mean, I think it's a lot better in decks that play very few code gates, just because it demands such a strong code gate breaker, and then doesn't reward Gordian Blade in specific, which sees all the play, in my eyes.
Refractor has a little bit of difficulty with this one because of the requirement to have 2 stealth credits, but once you do have the 2 stealth credits, you're actually netting credits from it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of the other way around. I would rather break this with Refractor than with a regular breaker. Like, unless you have to Ghost Runner through it.
2 recurring credits, 2 regular credits, or like 2 recurring plus 3 regular credits. Big deal, yeah. Yeah, that's it. So you're plus 3. I guess you could see... I just don't see a deck that wants to play very like aggressively enough to make the drawback negligible, but also slow enough that a 5-res code gate is a piece of ice that you want to have. Like that could be a Lotus Field, or that could be a guard or something, which is generally what you want to have in an aggressive deck, and that's the only way I see this drawback, which is a massive drawback. Like, let's not forget that this drawback is big enough that you can't have it on the outside of a server, which is horrible in the long game. It's just every way horrible in the long game.
I guess it's worth pointing out that strength 7 ice are reasonably rare in the game, and this is quite at the higher end of ice strength, and also having hard end the run subroutines in NBN is useful. So it's not useless, but I think you're absolutely right, Liam, that a res 5 cost ice in NBN is really hard to fund a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's rare that a card has a negligible influence cost, but I really think this is only going to see play in NBN and in weird, only because NBN decks tend to be weird already, so...
The first Wayland card is an interesting one. It's Oaktown Renovation. Agenda, initiative, public. Advance 4. It is worth 2 points. Install Oaktown Renovation face up. Whenever you advance Oaktown Renovation, gain 2 credits or 3 credits if there are 5 or more advancement tokens on Oaktown Reservation. Jesse, are you excited?
I really, really like this card. So for those of you who are just looking at it for the first time, when you're advancing this, you're spending a click and a credit, and you're gaining 2 credits, which is reasonably good. Not only that, but you're gaining an advancement token. So you're actually getting yourself ahead on resources for advancing it rather than normally being significantly behind. So that means that even if the runner steals it, you haven't made as big an investment, which means you're not losing the tempo in the same way that you do ordinarily when the runner steals an agenda that you've invested in. I don't see the second part of the ability triggering very much on this or any of the other face-up agendas, that if there are 5 or more advancement tokens, you get the extra benefit. I just don't really see that leaving it in play for longer is worth it. At that point, it becomes a capital investor's sort of that you're risking them stealing 2 points if they do go in and trash it, or steal it in this case, which is not really great. But the big downside on this card is obviously installing it face-up. It's not something we've seen before. You're giving away a lot by doing that. However, in a lot of Wayland decks, you're not going to be bluffing your agendas as something other than agendas. You're going to be installing your agendas and daring the runner to steal them and threatening meat damage if they do, either from a tag from mid-season or from a punitive directly. So in that sense, this makes more sense in Wayland and it has more power, and the installing face up drawback is not such a big problem if you're not trying to play shell games anyway. So I think this has a really good chance of seeing play, and I'm quite excited to try it out.
The next Wayland card is one that Jesse's also very excited about, though I'm still not sure why. It's Corporate Town, Asset, Res 0, Trash 5, Influence 2. As an additional cost to Res Corporate Town, the Corp must forfeit an agenda. When your turn begins, you may trash one resource, and this cannot be prevented. Jesse, why are you so excited for it?
I think this card is really, really sweet. Assets haven't had the ability to be as hostile as this in the past. I know there is a whole subtype of assets called hostile assets, but bear with me. This actually attacks the runner's board in a way that Corp cards aren't usually able to do. The Corp is usually required to be very reactive, and the fact that you can install this in a server, not putting yourself behind at all, if they do run it, they're paying 5 to trash it. If they don't run it, at the start of your turn, you can flip it, forfeit an agenda, usually it'll be a hostile takeover, and destroy one of their resources without that being able to be prevented can really cripple the early economic development of a lot of runner decks that are relying on resources, or it can kill a contact or anything like that. It can be such a huge swing to be killing one of their resources proactively as the Corp earlier in the game. And the fact that this has such good stats in terms of Res 0, Trash 5, I think gives it a great chance of seeing play.
Yeah, I think that the biggest thing that makes this card good now is that basically every runner deck has resources in some capacity, and there are multiple runner decks which rely on like the Earthrise Daily Cast engine to get anywhere economically. And like, it's not the case as it was before that there were decks that were common that like played Account Siphon and didn't really want to play any resources because of how strong Earthrise, Symmetrical Visage, Daily Casts, Katie, and I'm sure there's heaps that I'm missing. Multiple decks will have multiple resources in play even before the game goes long, and so if you can get this card in a server early and they have multiple resources in play, not only can they not play more resources until they kill it, but if they don't want their second resource to be trashed, they have to try and trash this card before it gets out of hand. And so I think that that possibility of gaining a huge advantage, plus basically locking your opponent out from playing resources until they trash it, I think can be a huge tempo swing. But if you can manage the downside of having to lose an agenda, of course, which means necessitates playing it with Hostile Takeover.
I think there's an analogous effect here where you use maybe a snare or a psychic field to build upgrades on the remote. This card, in my eyes, kind of lets you build ice on the remote, because the way you can use it is just as a face down piece of ice that presents a lot of threat before you even res it. Just as Jesse and Wolfie said, it presents a lot of threat, and that's the big deal here. Because you present so much threat, you get to build the server as you please and make them run it before they can install their resources. So your ice turn on straight away, regardless of whether or not they have the resources in play.
The last Corp card we're talking about is Quicksand. It's a neutral ice barrier, Res 3, Strength 0, Influence 0. When the runner encounters Quicksand, place one power counter on Quicksand. Quicksand has plus one strength for each power counter on it. The one subroutine is End the Run. I think this card is steaming hot garbage, but what do you guys think?
I think it's pretty bad as well. Maybe if it started with one strength so it didn't get instantly parasited, but Parasite is already probably the most common runner card, at least in terms of the percentage of decks that have Parasite, and the fact that not only does this card not really punish the runner if they do happen to run into it, you need to run into it multiple times for it to slowly gain counters just makes it kind of not good.
I mean, as soon as the Corp reses this card, the runner's just not going there unless they absolutely have to, right? Like, is that the thing? Like, it's not a huge issue.
Yeah, generally I think runner decks are flexible enough to be able to go multiple places to develop their game plan in the mid game when it matters. The power that I can see in this card is against criminal decks more than anything else, who have a harder time accessing Parasite, particularly at instant speed. So this is going to be at least strength one, even if they do want to Parasite it from the first time they encounter it. But if you can get multiple of these rezzed on different servers against criminals when they're wanting to make runs to gain benefits, either as Gabe or as Andy running a security testing Desperado engine, then it's getting more expensive for them every time to get into those servers. So I think this is a really good anti-criminal card, and I don't think it's so bad, but I would have liked to have seen it at ResCost 2, I think.
Yeah, my mind definitely goes two places when I see this. The first is, just as you said, Jesse, anti-criminal against security testings. The second is that hyper-aggressive non-HB decks, you don't really have a comparable effect to next silver other than Wall of Static. And so having multiple of those effects is really important. Quicksand could see that second slot. So I could see two Quicksand next to three Wall of Static. So I think it'll see play in very unique hyper-aggressive slots or like very fast decks that live in heavy criminal metagames.
But yeah, the comparison to Wall of Static doesn't really flatter this card at all, does it?
No, not even a little bit. Unless you put it specifically on the remote, in which case you need to be against criminal.
Okay, that's all we have time for this week on The Winning Agenda. If you want to get in contact with us, you can check us out on Facebook. Our like page is The Winning Agenda. Shoot us an email at thewinningagenda@gmail.com. Check us out on Twitter, @winningagenda. And if you like our content and you want to like support us and say thank you in a small but meaningful way, you can jump onto inkedplaymats.com, type The Winning Agenda into the search bar, and pick yourself up some Winning Agenda playmat swag. Until next week, guys, it's been great having you on. We'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Catch ya.
Bye. Thanks for listening.